What's up, y'all? Summer's got a different tempo. Everything's a little looser, brighter. One plan turns into another. You hear something, you stay a little longer. Next thing you know, you're somewhere you didn't plan to be. It's those in-between moments. That's where the ideas hit. Conversations stretch out, little memories sneak up on you. And sometimes, it's just about what's in your hand. That color, that chill. The new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks. Guava and passion fruit flavors with mango pineapple flavored pearls. Yeah, that feels like summer before you even taste it. Funny how one small stop becomes the best part of the day. Start your summer rhythm with Starbucks. Try the new Tropical Butterfly Refresher from Starbucks.
During Memorial Day at Lowe's, shop household must-haves for less. Save $80 on a Charbroil Performance Series 4-Burner Grill to chef up something special. Plus, get up to 45% off select major appliances to keep things fresh. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 5/27, while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
What is up, everybody, and welcome back to Mile Higher Podcast. I'm Josh.
I'm Ian.
And there's Janelle over there.
Yeah, Janelle's here.
Trying to fix my hair. Hi. Hey.
Janelle's not feeling too good today.
No, I sound like ass.
She picked up some type of
disease.
Sickness.
Some New York related illness.
I mean, it's possible. She did step in human shit.
No, I did step in human poop, you guys. Tragic.
And you touched the shoes after.
Well, I didn't touch the shit after, but Kendall would not allow me to go into the hotel with my shoes.
Yeah. Why on earth would you do that?
I didn't.
I took them off.
I took them off.
good. Yeah, that would not be very kind.
No, I had to throw them out. Ian, have you, in all your years of living in New York, have you stepped in poo?
Genuinely, no, but there was one time I fell down like in the subway station. And I caught myself with both of my hands just for a second. They touched the ground. And when I pulled them back up, fully brown, fully
of
disgusting.
Poop?
No, just of filth.
Filth, yeah.
Just disgusting filth. No one knows. And that was the grossest. But no, I've never stepped in poop. Never. I encountered poop, but I never stepped in it.
Yeah. I didn't know it was poop. And for people being like, how do you know it was poop? It was poop and it was human poop.
Okay? I think you would know, right?
Because then I saw the full turd behind me.
The full turd.
And it was not dog poop. Okay? So.
Glad we got that.
I just
clarified.
Wanted to confirm because I don't want any sort of speculation going on.
It was okay? Confirmed human
it was confirmed
waste.
Human feces. Thank
yes.
you. Anyways.
We love that. Well, anyways, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about a very, very sad and disturbing case at that. This is the murder of Kim Wall, and we'll be talking a lot about not only Kim, but also be talking about a man named Peter Madsen. With a name like that, the dude is mad.
He's mad. I think in the multiple documentaries that we watched before this, they brought up how if you just bring up what is known in Denmark as the submarine case, everyone's going to know what you're talking about when it comes to Kim Wall and Peter Madsen, just because it really, I mean, it was everywhere. You couldn't avoid it at the time. Everyone was reporting on this story.
Extremely shocking, especially since Peter Madsen was something of a local celebrity to
Absolutely.
Some extent, right?
Yeah.
There was pretty extensive media coverage even before this crime takes place, but he is one oddball man. He reminds me a little bit of Stockton Rush, the creator of the Titan sub.
Absolutely.
And the reason why is he also created his own sub.
Right.
Peter did. And this crime potentially takes place, or does take place really, inside of his sub.
Yes.
Because Kim Wall, she goes to interview him and disappears. And she went into a sub and did not come out of the sub. And so that, you know, Peter, there is a lot to to get into with him. He's somebody who just wanted to build things and conquer the universe, really. I mean, he wanted to conquer the seas, and then he turned his eyes towards the sky and was working on trying to build a rocket that could launch him into space. So he's just kind of this mad scientist, but not a scientist at all.
No, very unlearned individual.
Yeah, which is wild. But he, a very, very dark individual who I don't know how many people, you know, really saw what happens coming. You know, there's people close to him that kind of saw some signs that maybe something could happen, but really it took everybody just by surprise.
Absolutely. I mean,
nobody, you know, the majority of people who knew him just could not believe what Peter ends up doing. But yeah, this is a truly wild case. Peter Madsen. So let's go ahead and get into things here, because Peter, you know, to really understand the guy, which I don't even know if I fully understand him even after learning all about him at this point, but you know, how did he get to this point? Because he, you know, it seemed like, at least to the public, that he was kind of on this Elon Musk trajectory without all the money, and I would say Elon Musk probably has a higher IQ, potentially.
Which that's not saying much.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Ian. And I'm not saying that because I think he's brilliant by any means, but it seems like he was Denmark sort of Elon Musk in a way.
Yeah, definitely. Know? He had this kind of eccentric personality that the press was just in love with for a time. They saw him as like this, you know, oh my God, he's a real mad scientist. You know, that's really how he was painted for almost a decade.
Almost obsessed.
Yeah.
With his mission. And, you know, initially that was building his submarines, and then he became obsessed with launching himself into space. And the guy has a massive ego and a very, very sinister side to him that we all know about now. But let's go back to the very beginning of Peter's life so that we can try to understand how we ended up where we are today. So Mr. Peter Madsen, he was born on January 12th, 1971 to Annie and Carl Madsen, who were pub owners. And he grew up primarily in Saby and Hong, both within Denmark. And he had at least three other siblings. It sounds like they were all boys. Now, there's a lot of conflicting reports about his childhood. According to the BBC, he was subjected to his father's authoritarian and violent tendencies, as all the boys in his family suffered abuse from his father. However, Peter sometimes claimed that he was the only boy who was spared the physical abuse. But there was also an age issue. His father was 36 years older than his mother. And eventually, his mother Annie divorced Carl and took the boys with her when Peter was 6 years old. According to one of his brothers, Peter lived with his mother only briefly before being raised by his father. And he was the only sibling to do so. His brother said that while Peter didn't like the way his father treated his other brothers, for Peter it was quote-unquote, okay. While he may have been the only sibling cared for by their father, that didn't mean the two grew emotionally close. Instead, while his father inspired this love of aviation, science, and military history, they never spoke about anything else. That was just it. You know, it seems like his father is largely responsible for instilling, you know, a lot of his passions.
Absolutely. And his coldness. You know?
Yes. And, you know, not being exposed to many other subjects, I think definitely had an effect on right. Peter. This is all he really knows, right? And I mean, you look to your parents for inspiration and guidance, and, you know, you, to some extent, you want to be like your parents. And,
right.
And so with his father being so strict and authoritarian, I think it was always, he was always sort of chasing that approval
right.
from his dad. One of his brothers is quoted as saying, not so much emotion, more science, when referring to Peter and his father's relationship. And on top of that, there's a possibility that Peter faced much abuse at the hands of his father. According to an early biography of Peter, he was characterized as a nerd with few friends during his primary academic career. And on top of that, there was still this serious disconnection with his father due to his age and temperament, which with his dad being so much older, yeah. there's going to absolutely be a difficulty to connect and relate. That would probably be pretty difficult to deal with.
Right.
With that big of an age gap.
You know, I know a lot of older like fathers who are within this age range who make a like they put an effort into like really connecting with their kids. But a lot of that connection is kind of focused on like this, the fact that there is this huge age gap. And it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you, you know? And they kind of play into it and they play along with it and they're able to have fun with it. But it doesn't seem like Carl is able to do that for Peter.
No, he's certainly not going to stoop down per se or dumb things down
right.
for Peter, kind of come down to his level. So for example, when Peter was going into high school, his dad was in his 70s already. So that's, yeah, I mean, that's like having a grandparent
right?
In some cases. So there is also Peter's first hero and his passion for rocketry, Wernher von Braun, whose father also had a fascination with. And of course, many of us have heard that name before. It's because Wernher was a famous Nazi aerospace engineer responsible for creating the V-1 and V-2 rockets alongside other weapons for the Axis powers during World War II. He was not just spared after the war, but also rewarded by moving to the U.S. and providing his services for the Apollo missions. It's also important to note that Peter's father grew up in Nazi Germany, which I think absolutely had a major effect on who he became eventually.
His dad grew up, you know, potentially even within the Hitler Youth, or at least with that on the outskirts of everything. It's like this sort of rigorous fascist, you know, style of not only parenting for Carl, but I'm sure that then went on to his solo parenting of Peter.
Yeah, I'm sure that was deeply ingrained in him at that point. And despite Peter's early obsession with rocketry and submarines, he simply didn't have the funds to test these experiments safely within the confines of his home or lab. And according to one source, his experiments cost him furniture and carpets. There you go. Got to make it happen one way or another. If you don't have the funds, just get rid of some furniture and carpets.
Yeah, just blow shit up, bro.
Just get everything out of your house.
Right.
Sleep in an empty room. It's kind of what Elon Musk is always saying. You know, he's like, not that he does that anymore, but in his early days, he'd be like, oh, I just sleep on the couch in the SpaceX facility, whatever, Tesla office.
I'm always coding, bro.
Yeah, I'm always working. But Peter began his experience with rocketry in the 1980s when he was still a teenager. And he really developed an interest in rocket fuel with the help of his physics teacher, Johannes Fischer. And he developed his first rocket alongside his teacher, and they launched it on March 3rd, 1986. And this rocket was 1 meter tall, or about 3.2 feet, and was modeled after an American ICBM nicknamed the Peacekeeper. So like an intercontinental ballistic missile, which there's that reference back to war.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's like, oh yeah, what's the first rocket I want to build? A nuke.
Yeah, right, right. And he, of course, built this in his father's workshop. But after his father passed away in 1990 when Peter was 19, he became friendly with the family who put on fireworks shows in Copenhagen's Tivoli Gardens. He also joined the Dansk Amateur Rocket Club, which was a local civilian rocket club that mainly counted engineering students among its members. These days, I'm looking for anything to help give me more energy, help me feel just better. I mean, I'm not getting as much sleep as I've been used to getting. And so, you know, I need a pick-me-up, and, you know, food has been one of those things that's helped pick me up. But for the longest time, those food cravings really got the best of me. I would be ordering fast food at 11 o'clock after I'd eaten dinner because I felt hungry. And before I knew it, started to put on weight, started to feel sluggish. And so this year, especially in the last couple of months, I've been really trying to take care of my health, really try to just do everything I can possibly do to optimize my energy levels so that I am on point, on game for work, for home, for chasing around little kids. And so, you know, that's where Veracity comes in. Veracity has got something called Metabolism Ignite, which is a natural supplement, drug-free, clinically proven, and doctor-formulated solution. And this supplement has absolutely helped give me more energy, and it's helped me lose some weight, which is great. You know, it's just easy capsules, you swallow some water, your favorite drink, and that's it. And before I knew it, in the last couple of weeks, started feeling more energy. And overall, I just feel like my metabolism went from a traffic jam to the express lane on the highway. It feels like things are just moving faster. I feel more energized, less sluggish, less bloated. And that's all thanks to Veracity. Because Veracity's Metabolism Ignite helps your body process glucose more efficiently, improves insulin sensitivity, and keeps those spikes from happening in the first place. And the result is stable, steady energy throughout the day, no crashes, no cravings. And it's no wonder that Metabolism Ignite has sold out 10 times because there's no side effects, no allergens. Yeah, you heard that right, no side effects. So you might be asking, well, Josh, what is in this Metabolism Ignite? Well, it's got lemon verbena, hibiscus extracts, green coffee bean extract, and of course, magnesium, which we all need more of. This unique blend aids in boosting your metabolism and helps with appetite control. And these unique ingredients ensures that Metabolism Ignite works at the mitochondrial level, your cell's actual powerhouses, so they start functioning the way you're supposed to. There's no jitters, no crashes, just steady, sustainable energy to help power you through your day. Because it feels like as you get older, the days get shorter, but the energy expended gets bigger. I am absolutely exhausted by the end of the day. And sometimes I don't even know why. I'm not even doing any, you know, that much physical activity, but it just feels like mentally, physically drained. And Veracity helps give me that ignition that I need in the morning. It's safe for everyone, including new moms. If you're pregnant or breastfeeding, of course. Veracity has a bunch of other supplements that can aid you with gut health. They also have a protein powder that's really good. So before Metabolism Ignite sells out again, control your cravings and boost your energy the natural way. Head to veracityhealth.co and use code MILEHIGHER for up to 65% off your order. Once again, that's Veracity health.co for 65% off. And make sure you use our promo code MILEHIGHER so they know that I sent you. However, Peter's membership with this group did not last for long because it seems like everybody started figuring out, like, this guy doesn't really know what he's doing.
He might be full of shit.
He's just kind of like, he knows enough. He's like one of those smart people, quote unquote, that know enough to get by. But then when they actually try to apply it to what they're doing, other more experienced engineering students be like, wait a minute, dude, that's not how that works.
This is wrong. Yeah.
And so, you know, they started realizing like this guy's over promising on his engineering abilities and then under delivering on the results and really lacked any sort of planning because it seems like Peter's just all over the place and he would get pissed. He'd start lashing out when things inevitably fell apart. Member said saying his name would start this fire sprinkler system, which that's an interesting way of putting it. Basically, you tell Peter anything and he's going to go off.
He's going to explode.
Yeah. He's just doesn't want to be told what to do. He thinks he knows the best way to do it and everybody else should just shut their mouth. His brother described Peter's temperament as just passion, while another described him as a man who argues with God and every man, which, yeah, that sounds more accurate for Peter.
Now, there are also numerous conflicting reports on his experience with engineering, something that would become a major element of his life moving forward. And according to some, he completed a few engineering courses, though never a full degree, and was enrolled in single courses while working towards his various scientific endeavors. Another source said that he abandoned engineering after, quote, he thought he had learned enough to build submarines and rockets. So he's like, you know what? I've learned enough. I'm good.
My engineering 101 class, I can build a sub now. Yeah.
Did you tell your dad about this guy?
Yeah, I did. And he did.
It's probably like, what a piece of shit for one, but
he's just like, what a fucking stupid idiot. Like,
can you be an engineer without an engineering degree?
No.
Like a true engineer.
Like a true, I mean, I'm sure there's some autodidacts in the world
that
who
are
were,
just like,
yeah, just
brilliant, yeah,
cracked as fuck. They figured it out. But like, I, at least among my dad and his colleagues, like, there's not a single professional, in his case, aerospace and, you know, rocket scientists who did not. Don't have like master's degrees.
Yeah, didn't fucking take advanced mathematics and right. Science and physics.
Quantum physics.
Right, yeah. Like you can't just, you know, flip through a book and be like, all right, I know how to do this.
Yeah, because bad news. Those who would later work for him as interns and volunteers described Peter as someone who never took any sort of engineering class in his life.
Damn. Exposed. God, so it's interesting that anybody would want to help this guy when
I know
he has no idea what he's doing.
I mean, we'll get there, but I think he was just really good at selling the dream.
He's just the visionary.
Right.
He's kind of like the Steve Jobs for his world.
He's like, I don't know what I'm fucking doing.
I didn't build this,
but
I know how to sell it.
Uh-huh.
I'll sell you on this idea.
He would ricochet around different academic careers, starting several degrees in welding, refrigeration, and, of course, engineering, but he dropped out of every single one. Another completely unclear thing is what Peter did for work in between his brief, if non-existent, stint at engineering school and the beginning of crowdsourced science projects. Did he ever work a job before he started a career of taking other people's money? Truthfully, it really doesn't seem like anybody actually knows. What is clear, though, is that during his 20s and 30s, Peter remained singularly obsessed with one pursuit, and that was creating his own submarine. He spent nearly all his life forging connections with real engineers, rallying volunteers to help him, and often opted to sleep at the workshops where he engaged in his various projects and experiments rather than the comfort of his own bed.
I mean, that's very much the Elon Musk mentality.
Yeah, that's why I made that connection, because it reminds me a lot of Elon's sort of mindset.
Well, and like even with Elon early on in Tesla, when it seemed like he didn't really know what he was fucking doing, and he just put an engine in a Lotus Elise and said, this is my new car, you guys should invest in it. You know, it's very much the same thing of just like, I don't have anything yet, but I promise you when it's here, oh my God, you're going to love it so much.
Totally. And he very much also brought that Steve Jobs sort of perspective, because he didn't actually create Tesla. He's not even the founder of Tesla.
Right.
It was actually two other dudes that started Tesla, but he came in because, you know, he's got the money and infused that company and then basically made himself the face of it. And it seems like Peter's sort of trying to do the same thing. You know, he wants to build the submarine. He has no real like clear action plan of how he's going to accomplish that. But the one thing that he's good at is selling people on this idea that it's possible. And he clearly knows enough that other smarter, more educated individuals who are like, oh, this is ambitious. And I think people can kind of respect like, okay, like, yeah, that's kind of cool. And like, how many other sort of companies or clubs for that matter, can you go and like work on a submarine?
Right. I mean, I think that's the big thing is just like for a lot of these engineering people, a lot of them students that would end up helping Peter, their other opportunities would be to make weapons. And so it's like, this is like the one true opportunity for them to build something that's rather cool, like kind of a childhood dream. And I think the other thing that really helps is Peter's obsession, like straight up, like I'm sleeping in the workshop. Like if he brings you around to the workshop and you see his bed, his cot in the corner, you know, you'd probably be like, wow, this guy is so committed. Of course it has to be true.
Yeah, that's a good point. He sold it that way too.
Right.
He's just, yeah, which, you know, kind of sort of garners that image of a mad scientist, right? Like he just won't leave the lab. He's hell-bent on reaching his goals, even if his goal is kind of mundane. Like, what am I going to do? Ride around in my submarine? Like,
that's
what's
kind of
the point?
Yeah, like literally, bro.
There's no point.
But, you know, don't worry, because Peter's life wasn't all consumed by his obsession with outer space and the deep sea. He made sure that there was still time for sex. According to his old friend, Camilla Ledegaard Svensson, Peter was a regular at Copenhagen fetish parties. She described these gatherings as a place of community where everyone was relaxed about everything, including their bodies. Peter was also an avid user of travelgirls.com, a website that was for, quote, meeting thousands of adventurous girls who want to travel. It seems like the website was mainly for women traveling in foreign cities to find dates, places to crash, or sugaring situations. While Peter likely didn't have the independent funds for the latter, he certainly utilized website services for the other two, and it seemed like he was doing this constantly.
He's got to go to these services, though.
He's
not having, I don't know if he didn't try, or maybe he's too busy working.
He might be too busy working.
Or he brings home a chick, and they're like, that's where you're sleeping, bro?
This is, especially
I ain't sleeping here.
Imagine if you're on vacation, you go on this like dating website, you're like, oh, here's this guy, he claims to be an entrepreneur, and then you go over and it's like, yeah, here's my fucking, there's my sheet on the floor next to the metal.
Bunch of like scrap metal and trash everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah, he's a freak, man. Another close friend of Peter, Deirdre King, said that he was doting, almost to a detriment. She said, "I broke both of my hands once, and Peter came by every day for 2 months and brushed my hair. He is a man who loves women. His ability to get women to feel comfortable around him would not only be a strategy he utilized for dates, but also for a much more sinister purpose later on." Still, despite his various sexual fetishes and liaisons, Peter remained committed to constructing his submarines, or at least convincing others to build the subs for him. Using crowdsourced funds, connections he had utilized throughout the years, and a team of volunteers, Peter successfully built 3 submarines, UC-1 Freya, UC-2 Kraka, and UC-3 Nautilus. Nautilus, the largest of the 3 at 56 feet, was officially launched on May 3rd, 2008 to much fanfare in Copenhagen and around the world. At the cost of $200,000, Nautilus was, for a time, the largest civilian-built submarine in the world.
Which, cool.
Yeah, fuck it, bro. What are you doing? What are you using it for?
Yeah, what application is this for, other than to say, look at me, gather around, photo op.
Or to get chicks, on board.
Yeah, I guess. Jesus, it just seems like, I mean, this guy's very ego-driven. And,
absolutely.
You know, anything he can do to get attention for himself and put himself in the spotlight, despite who knows how much actual work he did on this and how much of this was, you know, from his brain and not all these volunteers that were helping him that were far smarter than him.
And getting no money.
Yeah. Just crowdsourcing, taking other people's money to build this, to fulfill this childhood dream of his. It's kind of unreal, honestly, that he's able to get to the point where he did, in fact, have this large of a submarine from purely crowdsourcing funds and getting donors and stuff. It's crazy.
Others, like the captain of the Danish Navy divers, believe that the Nautilus was actually too heavy. They believe that if the sub dived to the depth of 10 meters, it may not have been able to resurface. So even here, there are engineering issues play.
If this goes below 30 feet, it's going to just keep sinking.
It's curtains,
never coming
bro.
Back up. Yeah.
With the Nautilus successfully built and Peter now officially famous in the Danish entrepreneurial scene, it was time for him to commit himself to another lifelong passion, rocketry.
It's like, I mastered submarines, so I'm good.
Let's do space.
Yeah.
Fucking idiot. Also, in May 2008, Peter co-founded Copenhagen Suborbitals with Danish architect and an actual NASA contractor, Christian von Bengsten. CS worked the same way as Peter's previous submarine constructions. He convinced thousands of people that the project was possible, he took their money, and then he had other, more experienced volunteers work for him to make this dream a reality.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were talking about earlier. Why on earth would anybody be willing to work for free, especially under Peter? Who is not a great boss.
No, he's an insane guy.
He's just mad. And you know, when you see footage of him, there's a Netflix documentary that actually captured a lot of the work that he did on the rocketry side. And you just get to kind of see him in action. And he's just kind of like barking at everybody. And, you know, he definitely still has sort of this way of, and again, it reminds me a lot of Stockton Rush. You know, he's still able to like kind of bring people together, get people to believe in his dream. And, you know, it seems like at least for a while, people were just excited about his energy because he's got this energy to him. He's like, you know, bouncing around and, you know, we're going to do this, do that. And he seems to sort of have a plan, it feels like. But as we'll see, things don't go exactly the way that he thought it would. Right. But for many that were working under Peter, there were fresh engineering grads, and this would be their only opportunity, as Ian said, to work on something that was not related to the military or, you know, some type of weapons contractor. And with a group of people working towards a singular goal of putting a manned civilian rocket into space, I mean, if you're successful, this could be kind of a big deal, right?
This would be huge. I mean, you're responsible for putting someone fucking in orbit. That's amazing.
So you've probably heard us talk about this many times before on the show, but Hungry Root has been an absolute game changer for our family. We're busy, We got two little ones, and we don't have the time that we used to go grocery shopping at 9 p.m. on a Saturday and just leisurely walk around and get all the food that we want and then, you know, make dinner at whatever time. Those days are gone. We are on a tight schedule. We got to get kids in bed. I got to get the animals fed. I got to get myself fed. And so Hungroot really just makes that so much simpler, because Hungroot takes all the thinking out of it and a lot of the cooking out of it as well, because a lot of the Hungroot meals and ingredients are ready to go straight out of the box. It's just a matter of heating it up. Like the pasta sauces, we're a big fan of their Alfredo sauce. They also have this cheesy sauce that's really great. They also have a wonderful marinara sauce. And then it's boiling some noodles, and you can throw in a protein, which all their proteins are really high quality. A lot of them are sous vide, which is very delicious. So you get that nice, tender, juicy protein. And they have over 50,000 chef-crafted recipes, so you'll never get sick of what you're eating. And many of them are ready in just 15 minutes or less. One of the other great things about Hungroot is the amount of customization you can do to your plan. You can do how many servings you need. You can also go into their individual recipes and remove ingredients. So sometimes it's got a lot of red onion, and I am not a red onion fan. Get that out of here. I don't want to smell it. I don't want to see it. So I'll just remove it from the recipe altogether. And that way I don't waste food. It just doesn't show up in my box. Hungroot holds all of its food to high standards. They screen out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, yuck, artificial sweeteners, ugh, and preservatives. Nobody wants that. It's all fresh, ready to go. Only high quality ingredients like meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics, plus organic produce and non-GMO options. And what's great is you'll discover a lot of really great brands in addition to Hungroot's food that you may not have heard before that you'll become a huge fan of, because it's just high quality, it feels nutritious, and it's delicious when it goes down into your belly. It's really good stuff. My kids love it. A lot of the recipes, they have kid-friendly options. They also have snacks for kids, desserts, you name it. Hungroot's got you covered for any meal time of the day. We love it, and you're going to love Hungroot as much as we do. For a limited time, get 40% off your first order, plus get a free item in every box for life. Just go to hungroot.com/milehigher and use code milehigher. That's hungroot.com/milehigher. Use code milehigher to get 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life. So over the next few years with suborbitals, those were some of the best years of Peter's life. He explained that he put every dime he had into the project, though again, it seems like those dimes were not his to begin with. But with CS, Peter also worked on his international notoriety, giving TED Talks in Ukraine and appearing in local, national, and international TV spots to spread the word about his various projects. We actually found a clip of Peter talking at a TEDx in Kyiv in 2013.
We're waiting for the sound to be done. They're working on it. The technicians working hard. What you should notice, am I on still?
Yeah.
Okay, what you should notice is that to test such an engine is in fact a teamwork. Lots of volunteers here working for no wages, working many hours a week, go to this island and work hard to have these engines and things built. This is a view through the bunker wall. We are inside a special bunker when we do the testing. And here we can see some of the work being done on the propellants. The engine operates on liquid oxygen at minus 183 degrees centigrade, and it produces a 2,800 degrees hot flame. The technology here is not as advanced as it would be at Baikonur, but the kind of technology is actually developed at about the same time as the large rockets were developed that flies today at Baikonur. This is 1950s, 1960s technology that we're using here, and it really, really works even today. The difference between now and then is that we have access to knowledge in no small part because of the internet. That means that we can design these things ourselves, and all the subcomponents, as this valve, have become a lot cheaper than they were in the 1960s. Because of modern production methods. So we couldn't do this in any other time than the time we live in, because you simply need access to hardware and you need access to information. And that's where the internet makes this possible.
One of the interesting things is that Peter did have a wife,
mm-hmm.
whose name has been withheld from public record, but it sounds like she married him in a private ceremony at Copenhagen City Hall in November 2011. And she actually worked in the film industry. We're not really sure what she did in the film industry, but she would obviously spent a lot of time with Peter at his workshop and on the docks of Ref Salun in Copenhagen. However, it's important to note that Peter and his wife had an open relationship from the start. And Peter, of course, was still a regular at fetish parties across Copenhagen. Plus, with Peter's submarine, he had a new way to introduce himself to women he was attempting to court. Once, while spending 100 days aboard the submarine with Peter for a documentary, one woman volunteer said, "Women found him fascinating, but more importantly, it played a role in his seduction technique, with Peter throwing out a line like, 'This is my submarine. You want to see my submarine?'" And he'd use that all the time. And that's what's interesting is like, you really wonder what was more satisfying for him, actually having a working submarine or being able to just say, "This is my submarine," even right. though it's not his submarine.
No, it shouldn't be
at all. It shouldn't be. Yeah, exactly. But meanwhile, his aerospace little company's making some serious progress. And after a few successful launches, though none of these rockets were actually making it into space or breaching the atmosphere, nor did they have Peter on board. But he had successfully constructed the launch system, the launch pad, the booster rocket engines. Although, you know, we still, I think most of us believe he probably had no part in actually building rocket engines. Let's be honest. It's not easy to just build a working rocket engine.
I mean, we couldn't fucking, let's do it today, bro.
Yeah. I wouldn't even know where to start. I could do a bottle rocket, maybe.
For sure. Yeah. Even that would probably frustrate me.
Yeah. Even that requires some science and actual education. But similar to his partnership with the other Rocket Club, Peter's temperament and personality were hard to manage, especially for his partners and volunteers who were working under him. Another quote about him was, "He has a hard time getting along with other people. He has lofty ambitions and he wants to do everything his way." And that's key. Everything revolves around Peter. You must follow what Peter wants you to do or you get booted.
Right.
Similar to Stockton Rush.
Similar to Stockton Rush.
It's just, I find it interesting, both sub makers. I don't know if there's something with people who make submarines, but it's weird that they have that same sort of mindset.
There needs to be a psychological mapping done of these kinds of individuals, because then we also on the far end of things have James Cameron, who by all accounts is a chiller.
Yeah. Interesting. Wonder, that is interesting that he is not quite in this same boat at all. But according to those with CS, cooperation among Peter and Christian began to break down in 2014 due to disagreements between the two. And it was mainly over Peter's erratic and emotional behavior. However, that's not how Peter put it. He said that one day before a launch that was to be covered by numerous news sources, Christian took Peter aside and told him, "I don't know if I can have you attend the next launch." And Peter said that it felt like through Christian, he had gotten another boss. Even though, again, there's no proof that he was ever the boss in the first place. But Peter said that he quit right then and there and walked away from the project that he had dedicated numerous years to. Which, here's a clip of Peter explaining that split in an early documentary.
"I failed to continue my collaboration with Christian. This is endangering the very life of some orbitals. And that's my big situation now." "It's an incredibly sad thing. And it's just, I can only say that I think 6 years is a long time for a close collaboration that we have had for two people so different, for two people, quite frankly, with so much ego and so much commitment." I am very, very likely the motivation and the inspiration, but I am also the opposite, because that's what makes this so hard. People who have a lot of passion can be very hard to deal with and to collaborate with. There's lots of historic examples of that. And my responsibility is to try to overcome these trouble and make it work anyway.
Peter said that his friends at CS had become his enemies. Though that's not all he said. He later explained in the same interview that another perspective of the scenario would be that psychopaths exist among us. human predators that use people and stalk them after. Which, what a fucking bizarre thing to say.
It's really bizarre that he said this.
And this is just a glimpse into the mind of Peter. But, you know, if we just start with that, definitely concerning. But he explained that these predators are often very charismatic, convincing, and have illusions of self-grandeur with no regard for anyone else. And he posited that he, Peter, might even be one of these human predators. So he even put this on himself.
Yeah.
And he ended the quote by saying, "Would the psychopath know that he's a psychopath?" Which I'm like, you're thinking about yourself? Like, right. What are we doing? And oddly, he brought this up in a monologue in relation to his exit from CS. But this will make sense later on as we work through the story, because this reemerges.
Yeah, definitely.
Time and time again.
So in June 2014, Peter created Rocket Madsen Space Lab, or just RM Space Lab for short. Once again, the goal was very close to that of CS, the development and construction of a crewed, civilian-built spacecraft. And it wasn't just the goal that was close to CS. Peter actually started this new lab in the same shipyard as CS, only 85 meters away from one another.
He would.
It's you know, in that Curb Your Enthusiasm season, the Spite store, where he opens the store to spite the other store, yeah, like a couple blocks away.
I can do this better than you, and I'll do it right next door.
Yeah, exactly. Peter often described this distance as the no man's land in World War One, which that's the distance between the trenches where everyone got killed.
Okay, Peter.
Yeah, it's fucking...
So it's a war zone, then.
It's a war zone. Yeah. It's a war zone. In between the two trenches, this was an issue they were never going to resolve, and he was going to ignore CS for, quote, all time. But still, between the TED Talks, submarine coverage, and various television interviews throughout the years, Peter was a bona fide celebrity in Copenhagen and had no trouble recruiting new volunteers to work with him on his new independent space program. Among the first was a man named Christopher Meyer, who quickly became RML's no-nonsense flight director for their eventual launch tests. He and Peter have been friends since 2007, after his wife gifted him an expedition in Peter's sub for his birthday. While on board, the two men struck up a conversation about their shared love of science. Since then, Christopher has remained a close friend and trusted advisor to Peter, and the two men remained within each other's inner circle. And many others joined the cause. Mainly, they were recent engineering grads looking to intern with Peter to gain experience in spaceflight, and others, like Sarah, and this is not her real name, were drawn to Peter's drive and passion and simply wanted to be involved in the mission. Sarah said that she and Peter were, quote, understanding each other's emotions and passions. He knows how to pick me up from where I am. He knows how to tell me I am great as I am. As tests continued throughout the years, including Peter being strapped into a rocket-powered centrifuge that drew many onlookers, the ultimate goal was to launch three rockets over the Baltic Sea in 2017 to see if their blueprinted launch pad, rocket, and life support systems could work as intended before the flight itself was manned by Peter. However, Peter couldn't help but cause distress among his volunteers. In 2015, a dispute emerged between Peter and the crew who had been maintaining the Nautilus. He said, "You may think that a curse is lying on the Nautilus. That curse is me. There will not be peace on the Nautilus for as long as I exist."
What?
Yeah, it's you know, it's him. It's similar to this human predator comment where it's him almost relishing in the fact that he's this mercurial, violent person. And like, don't you like that about me?
Yeah, I mean, it's a power play move on his part.
Right.
You know, he always wants to make sure that everybody knows he's the dominant alpha male,
right,
in the building, and nobody will ever take that from him.
Never. Right.
And it's somehow sewn into the Nautilus at this point.
Right.
Like, it is me.
When I walk on board, this is my fucking sub.
Yep.
Oh, sorry.
Which, working with somebody like that, how fucking old would that get?
Dude, I know.
They're just constantly reminding you, like, no, this is my shit.
Well, and like, fucking, they're not getting paid.
Yeah.
I think that's the other thing is, like, these poor people are doing it just for the love of it, really. And that, I imagine that's what they're telling themselves as Peter is berating them. You know, I love working on the sub. I love working with rockets, you know, but they're not getting they're not getting, you know, compensated at all for their extreme labor.
Yeah, I mean, kudos to them for following their passion, I guess,
right.
But it's like, at what cost?
Right.
Nothing hurts more like looking at your wireless bill and just tears start flowing out of my eyes because I can't believe how much I'm paying for these big wireless carriers. You know, they tout themselves as the biggest, the best, the biggest and the largest. And you know what? They are, but their service and their customer service is god awful. I can't tell you how many drop zones I run into when I have full bars. And I just feel like I'm getting ripped off at the end of the day. I'm tired of paying, really overpaying for my wireless plan. So as soon as my contract is up, I'll be trying out Mint Mobile because Mint Mobile is giving you the same access to the towers that they use at a fraction of the cost. And it all comes with high-speed data, unlimited talk and text delivered on the largest 5G network. So you're not downgrading to 4G or 3G or dial-up. You're still getting 5G data, which none of us can live without, let's be honest. You can bring your own phone and number, and you can activate with an eSIM card. It's super easy. And actually, we got a Mint Mobile phone for Higher Hope Coordinator, I think last year at some point, and she's loved it. She's had nothing but great things to say about the Mint Mobile service. And of course, that bill is so nice in comparison to my big wireless bill I'm getting right now. And what's great, no long-term contracts. There's no hassle. So you're not locked in forever. You're not signing your life away. You can ditch the overpriced wireless plans and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile right now for $15 a month. I mean, what a deal. If you like your money, Mint Mobile is for you. Shop plans at mintmobile.com/milehigher. That's mintmobile.com/milehigher. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month, 5 gigabyte plan required equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details.
But as other volunteers finally became fed up with Peter's antics and left, he would always be able to find new ones to heed the call. And of course, the drama with CS, with whom he had said he'd professionally divorce, ramped up. Peter decided to not only do his test launches the same day as CS, but in the same location on the Baltic Sea and with a launch pad similar to the one he had designed for CS. He even commented when he put their launch pad in the water and looked at CS's, and then he said, "These two ships have the same father."
Little taunt,
a little more of this fucking ego, because I don't think he built them, yeah. Either of them. But of course, this was Peter, and the plan for constructing the launch pad was so haphazard that just days after it was placed in the water, an intern noticed that one of the bolts holding the entire pad together had almost fallen off. The pad risked collapsing on itself before it ever saw a test.
Solid engineering.
The best. Yeah. The best.
Can't even get the bolts screwed in.
That's it, yeah. Right? Like, that's like you're making a Gundam, not like building a rocket.
Yeah, what was interesting to me, too, is in this documentary where they're showing, you know, all this work taking place, I'm trying to recall a time that I actually saw Peter actively doing something. That was actively like engineering or working or welding or anything like that. I didn't really see any of that. He's just kind of overseeing.
And yelling.
And yelling and pointing and being like, let's go and get doing meetings and stuff.
Right.
But I did not see him, you know, with a ratchet or anything like that.
No, no.
Making sure bolts are tight.
Literally the only time I think in the documentary is towards the end when he's been abandoned by everyone. And he's packing parachutes, I believe.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's literally the only time.
The one thing that he really cares about,
right,
is I need to make sure that I can float back and stay alive.
So between this civilian space race, the army of volunteers, and Peter's charismatic, if insane, personality, a number of members of the press became very interested in Peter's story. Among them was documentarian Emma Sullivan, who captured some of the most intimate footage of Peter in the 17 months leading up to his planned launch dates. And that's the documentary we've been referring
Into
to.
Into the Deep is what it's called on Netflix. Definitely watch it if you haven't. It has tons of footage that you can only see through that documentary that Emma took.
She captured basically everything from Peter's successful centrifuge test to his volunteers abandoning him to pack parachutes for the planned launch, as we just said. And just then, in August 2017, Peter was contacted by international journalist Kim Wall, who was looking to do a story on his rocket program for Wired magazine before she moved out of Copenhagen.
So let's talk about Kim, because Kim was a very, very impressive individual. And she had reached out to Peter. At the time, she was a 30-year-old independent reporter and had gone all over the world to capture stories. She had been stationed in Uganda, to Cuba, the Marshall Islands, Kenya, New York City, and even once slipped into North Korea, which how many people can say that? But Kim's stories often focused on gender, identity, and subcultures, and often brought forward themes of social justice. Her parents wrote, "Kim worked as a journalist in the most dangerous places, and we have often worried about her." However, Copenhagen seemed to be her own backyard. She was born in 1987 and grew up in the small Swedish town of Trelleborg. Trelleborg sits just across the strait that divides Denmark from Sweden. And although Kim herself kept an apartment in New York and constantly traveled the world, her boyfriend, Ole Staub, had just moved to an area of Copenhagen called Refselund, close to where Peter's rocket quest was taking place.
Kim first studied international relations at the London School of Economics before spending a year in Delhi and securing a spot in a rigorous master's program at Columbia University School of Journalism, perhaps the best journalism program in the world. Her professor at Columbia said that Kim was the epitome of journalism and saw it as a true calling for herself. Friends said that she was curious about the world and sought out those who experienced the world from the fringes. One of her friends and cohort within the program, Anna Codrea-Rado, said, quote, "What made her journalistic ability so exceptional was that she looked for quirky stories, but with a bigger narrative. She reported them deeply. She never made a spectacle of the characters. Her reporting was rock solid." But the world of journalism had changed. Even though Kim was internationally renowned and well-known for her work, she didn't have a dedicated gig for any particular paper. While she had told others she was working on the space race piece for Wired, its publication wasn't promised, which meant the pressure was high on Kim to deliver a high-interest piece the magazine couldn't say no to. And while she was able to secure interviews with CS members, Peter seemed completely out of reach. She and Ole had planned to move to Beijing in mid-August of 2017 and were planning to throw a going-away party on the 10th. Just then, as she and Ole were preparing a barbecue on the water, Kim received a text from the rocket man himself, Peter Madsen.
Which just leads us to the week of August 10th, 2017, and this week hadn't been a great one for Peter Madsen. After another group of interns had walked out of the planned launches later in the month, he was left to pack dozens of parachutes by himself. Aw, poor Peter. He's got to do some work. He's got to pack his own parachute that's going to potentially save his life if he in fact launches himself into the air. But not only that, he had also been engaging in some very, very strange behaviors with a number of volunteers, namely those who were closest to him. Sarah, we were talking about earlier, who Peter really considered a trusted and close friend, texted him for motivation to get her work done. You know, kind of like, "Hey, boss, like, kick me in the rear so that I can, you know, get busy here." Right. And he had the most weird way of going about this. And, you know, to be fair, Sarah did ask jokingly to ask Peter to present a death threat towards
right.
her. Like, get your work done or else.
Type or I'll thing. Kill you. Yeah. You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Which is very strange. But he responded that he had planned out her murder if she didn't finish, saying, "I have a murder plan ready, which is a great pleasure." He explained that she was going to be bound inside the Nautilus. So this is already going beyond just like, get your work done or I'm going to kill you.
Right.
And now, let me walk you through a step-by-step plan of how I'm going to murder you. So he explained, again, she was going to be bound, forced inside the Nautilus where he was going to cut you into pieces. And of course, at the time, Sarah only thought that this was one of Peter's strange jokes. And it sounds like, although strange to us, this, you know, he joked a lot like this.
Right. It seems like he constantly spoke about everything in violent or militaristic or just everything was the most extreme with Peter.
On August 9th, one of the lead interns, Stefan, had a very strange encounter with Peter. Unprompted, the rocket man turned to Stefan and asked him if he had heard of a website where you can see, this is a quote, "victims from murder scenes." Stefan explained that Peter said this as if he had known about the website and further emphasized that the comment had come completely out of the blue. which that is a very, very disturbing and strange thing to just say to somebody out of nowhere.
Do you know about this snuff website? Like, that's very disturbing.
He also said that on the Nautilus, they could wage battle against their enemies without being seen, and that space was just another front of their war against those who doubted them. So more, you know, war talk going on. He often said how he liked to spoof authorities, moving behind their backs to do exactly what he wanted, no matter the cost. So now he's showing almost a devious side of him that he has sort, you know, he kind of seeks the thrill of getting away with, you know, crimes without getting caught. He also texted Sarah on August 9th saying that they should take out the sub sometime this week. And assuming this to be another one of their exciting excursions, Sarah agreed. However, she would never have the chance to actually go on this excursion. On August 10th, Emma, the documentarian, showed up around 9 to film a quick interview with Peter about the upcoming launch. And it's important to note that on the back wall behind Peter, an orange-handled wood saw is clearly in frame in this interview. But keep this in mind. Then in the afternoon, Kim Wall arrived at the workshop to have some tea with Peter, and he offered to take her out on the Nautilus. Kim wanted to go out to sea at night, and since this might be her last night in Copenhagen, she decided to skip the goodbye party. Her boyfriend, Ole, wanted to climb on board and was insanely close to saying yes, but decided to stay back to tend to their guests. Plus, initially, Kim planned to be back before the party wrapped up, so this is supposed to be a quick little submarine ride. Just before boarding the submarine at around 7 p.m., Kim texted Ole a picture of the Nautilus along with windmills on the water and a photo of herself behind the steering wheel. She then texted him, "I'm still alive, by the way, but going down now. I love you." He brought coffee and cookies. A short time later, while Ole tended the barbecue and the sun was setting, he looked out to sea and saw the Nautilus, where Kim was standing on the observation deck waving at him. And unfortunately, this would be the last time either of them saw one another. And meanwhile, the goodbye party continued into the night as the group moved to the nearby bar. But still, even as hours kept passing, there was no sign of Kim after that final hand wave. Ole became worried. Not only was it unlike Kim to not remain in contact with him, but the couple had also planned to attend a wedding early the next morning. So she's not back yet.
Right.
And this was supposed to be a quick little ride from what it sounds like. And all of a sudden, quite a bit of time is passing. I think everybody knows the inherent danger with submarines, right? Especially a homemade submarine. Like, how safe really is it?
Well, and especially since, you know, I'm sure part of Kim's story was planned to be about how eccentric this guy was. And so Ole certainly knew that going into this is like, oh, this guy is a little, you know, he's a little out there. Maybe his sub isn't as safe as you know, he's presenting it to be. And so I'm sure that's the initial thought going around in his head too.
If you're looking for more ways to save money and grow your savings, maybe take that vacation you always want to do, maybe get that new vehicle you always wanted. Well, if you're not managing your money with Rocket Money, then stop what you're doing and get Rocket Money right now, because Rocket Money is the way to manage your personal finances. Not only that, it helps you find those pesky unwanted subscriptions, organizes them for you, and it helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. It's the full, complete, all-in-one package for managing your finances, getting them back on track and growing your savings account and reaching all of your goals and dreams. I love Rocket Money. I've been using it for years now. It's by far the best app out there for managing your personal finances. There's lots of other options, but I really love what Rocket Money is doing. They make it seamless to connect all of your accounts, bank accounts, credit card accounts, investment accounts, you name it. You can connect it all into one dashboard. They have a beautiful app, lays everything out, nice charts, so that you can see, you know, when money is coming in, money's going out. And it sends you custom alerts, like when bills are being pulled out of your account, or it'll tell you if a utility bill went up in cost, so you can go see what the hell happened. There's so many great features to it. It even has credit monitoring, which is super important to have these days. It can even monitor your net worth with the premium version. It really is a great app. I highly recommend it. I've found so many subscriptions that I had no idea I was paying for. Even duplicate ones. I was paying for two HBO Max accounts at one point. Don't ask me why. I don't know. I honestly don't know why I spend money on some things or why money comes out of my account sometimes. It just does. I don't know. But Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps you find and cancel those unwanted subscriptions and monitors your spending and helps you lower your bills so you can grow your savings. So let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/milehigher. It's rocketmoney.com/milehigher. rocketmoney.com/milehigher. Let's be honest, who likes shopping in person these days? It's a very rare that I find myself in a store shopping for clothes. You know, sometimes it can be fun, sometimes it can be just a complete pain. And nothing's worse than when you drive to a clothing store, you buy all these clothes and you forego trying them on. Then you get home, you try them on and they don't fit, you don't like them. And then you have to drive all the way back, return the clothes. It's a huge pain. Don't do that anymore. Stitch Fix is the answer to getting all of those fresh fits and fashion that you've been wanting. And you get access to a personal stylist who does all of it for you. So you can just sit back, sit on the couch, watch your favorite show, and let your personal stylist go to work at Stitch Fix. What's great about it is when you go through the onboarding process with Stitch Fix, you give them all the information, what types of pieces you're looking for. Like, you know, they can find basically head to toe. They got you covered, but maybe you already have a bunch of belts, or you already have a bunch of jeans, or you have shoes and you're like, I don't want somebody to pick out my shoes, which that's kind of me. You can customize all that. Then you let them know what kind of brands you like. They take that into consideration and make sure they don't send you something that you don't like. And even if they do send you something you don't like, it's easy, free returns. They give you a prepaid shipping envelope. You just throw it in there. You throw it in your mailbox or you drop it off at the post office and that's it. It's super simple. It's easy. I've gotten so many great pieces over the years from Stitch Fix. They also have Stitch Fix for kids. So maybe you're just a busy professional and you just don't have time to go shopping and you want somebody to take care of that for your kid. Make sure they're looking fresh at school. Stitch Fix has got you covered. You're a woman, you're a man, whatever. Stitch Fix has got you covered. And what's great is that Stitch Fix is no risk, all style. Try it all on in the comfort of your home, keep it work, send back the rest, and no subscription required. Plus, you get a free try-on for your first fix. So what's not to love? Get started today at stitchfix.com/milehigher to get $20 off your first order and they'll waive your styling fee. That's stitchfix.com/milehigher.
So Ole waited by the pier for a while for Kim to surface in the sub. Then he went back to his apartment and tried to sleep. Still, he was racked with an uneasy feeling and finally got up. He grabbed his bike and rode along the coastline to see if he could spot the Nautilus in the distance. At around 1:45 a.m., he called the police to report her missing. Then at 2:15 a.m., he called the Navy. Around 4 a.m., the police and the Navy were alerted to a possible accident at sea reported by the local Maritime Rescue Center. Following this, helicopters and ships were dispatched to search the waters around the city. Meanwhile, volunteers for Peter scrambled around the warehouse and began their own search on land, looking for any sign of their leader. Very few of them had known that he was on board with someone else, and even few of them knew her name was Kim Wall.
Because it kind of seems like this was a sort of a spur of the moment type of thing. Like,
right.
This was not planned. You know, he didn't inform the rest of the people that worked for him that this was going to happen. So, you know, they're kind of like, well, Peter is Peter. You may have just like went out and there's supposedly this other journalist that's with him, but we really don't know.
Right. We don't know anything. So at 10:30 a.m., the Nautilus was spotted near a lighthouse in the Cuyah Bay. And Peter also radioed at this point and messaged, "Everyone on board is fine." A man who had spotted the sub while out on his boat saw Peter on the tower before he went down the hatch and reemerged as the sub suddenly started sinking. Those who witnessed the sinking said it looked like it was simply diving, and others believed that Peter intentionally sank it. Peter then jumped into the water and began swimming towards a nearby motorboat, which pulled him up and sped him back to the docks. At this point, local media had learned of Peter's misadventure and were waiting for his return to land. When a reporter asked if everything was okay, Peter simply gave a thumbs up and said he was fine, but sad that the Nautilus had sunk. He explained that there had been a defect in the ballast tank.
So this is hours later. I mean, it was, we're talking, almost like 12 hours later by this point, 10 to 12 hours later, that he reemerges and without his submarine.
without his submarine and without Kim.
Right.
However, Ole, Kim's boyfriend, was on the dock when Peter was returned to land and knew something was wrong from the moment he gave the thumbs up. Even the volunteers, who may not have known Kim's name, were wondering what had happened to the other person aboard the submarine with him.
It's so weird how casual he is, too.
Yes.
Coming back. Like, dude, we know you had somebody else out there.
Right.
So why are you giving the thumbs up? Like, yeah, I'm good, but there's no sort of like panic on his end. There's no like immediate like, oh my God, this is what happened to the other person I was with. It was almost like he was hoping everybody just forget that
she was there and just move on.
Kim had actually gone on the sub with him.
Right.
It was wild.
Peter's first story to the authorities was that he had dropped Kim off at the tip of the island at around midnight to be picked up by Ole. Obviously, Ole knew this was a lie since he had not been in contact with Kim since her final text before they set off on the water. Peter was officially arrested and charged that same day with involuntary manslaughter for, quote, having killed in an unknown way and unknown place Kim Isabel Frederica Wall of Sweden sometime after Thursday, 5 p.m. Authorities initially tried to triangulate Kim's location using her phone, and a local bar owner had CCTV that covered every possible angle of the area Peter claimed to have dropped her off. There was no body seen. The following day, in a closed-door court session, Peter changed his story. He hadn't dropped off Kim. Rather, she had been accidentally killed when the hatch fell on her head. In his words, Peter, quote, panicked, dragged her body out of the sub using a rope, and buried her at sea. However, this does not square away with the first pieces of physical evidence authorities had. For one, dried blood belonging to Kim was found inside Peter's nostril, as well as scratches on his hands and face that indicated a struggle. This blood could even be noticed in the first photos of Peter after he was rescued from the sub. Peter's wife, whose name is not publicly available, immediately left him following this admission. Ole and Kim's parents made numerous pleas to the public, asking anyone to please come forward if they had any information about her disappearance. And at first, some of the volunteers and interns tried to have faith in Peter, believing that he had dropped Kim off during the night and that whatever happened to her had occurred without his involvement. However, as Peter changed his story to one of accidental death, they began to see their once trusted leader for what he really was, a complete monster. Stefan had discovered hundreds of saved videos on Peter's personal workshop computer depicting extreme violence, torture, and murder of women. And not only that, but they learned that Peter engaged with this content consistently. Just moments before he texted Emma on August 10th asking her to come to the workshop, he had watched a video of a woman being murdered. And while waiting for Kim to arrive for their voyage, Peter Googled, quote, beheading, agony, and pain. What a sick, sick freak.
So concerning. Yeah. And the fact that he's doing this at the workshop, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like he's just doing it constantly, whenever he has a free moment.
And basically out there in the open. Other people are using this computer and coming across his searches and what he's looking at. And
do you think he's stupid or just doesn't give a shit?
I think probably both, honestly.
Yeah.
I think he doesn't give he's like, no one's going to check this. And if they do, whatever. You know, I mean, it got to the point where he was even bringing up these snuff films to the interns unprompted.
Yeah, it's, I mean, this is definitely him slipping into, you know, this very, very dark place and probably a place that he's been in more so in private for years before. But now it's clearly consuming him. The fact that he's constantly doing this is just, it's disgusting. But Emma, who herself had been filming Peter for over a year, began to recognize his very strange behaviors. For one, she had noticed that he had never invited another man on board the submarine, only women, which that detail was, honestly, it surprised me. But at the same time, when you know, look beneath the surface of Peter, you realize, okay, there's a deeper meaning to this.
Right.
And what was his submarine really built for? Plus, remember that orange wood saw that was pictured in the August 10th footage. Well, that saw was no longer in the workshop. According to footage Emma had captured the next day while they were searching for him, where'd it go? It seems like someone needed this wood saw on the submarine. And why? This thing's made of steel. So what else is it being used for? In addition to this realization, Emma also found footage Peter had recorded himself in 2015. And in the footage, he is alone in a hotel room with the camera placed inconspicuously as he speaks to himself. While for the most part, Peter's words are inaudible, the framing is extremely eerie, mirroring many of the videos that he had saved on his computer, almost like he was rehearsing something that he was planning to do. And Sarah, who had received the strange text from Peter, what she had once considered humorous, she now recognized them as plans. Because Peter wasn't just going to kill Kim on board the sub. It became clear to her that he was going to kill whoever the next woman was who submerged with him. And once the Nautilus was resurfaced, it was determined there wasn't an issue with the ballast tank. It had been intentionally sunk. And on top of that, the dive team investigating described finding what looked like a piece of flesh alongside signs that included a lot of blood, Kim's jacket, and tickets that were still inside the pocket. On August 21st, 2017, a cyclist riding along Ama Island on the Kuya Bay discovered something that had washed ashore, and it was a human torso. The next day, DNA analysis confirmed that this torso belonged to Kim, and on September 5th, the court upgraded Peter's charges to manslaughter, though he maintained his story that the hatch had accidentally killed Kim. And obviously, the next thing investigators have to do is try to back up Peter's story,
right?
If that's in fact what happened, which again, you're finding pieces of remains. There's obviously a lot of doubt there, but they need to be able to prove that Peter's story is a lie.
Right.
And while they didn't yet have Kim's head to disprove his version of events, the autopsy results painted a very grim picture. Not only had Kim been stabbed 15 times around her genitalia, but wounds had been made specifically to release gas from her body and lungs, and the torso had been weighed down with pieces of metal, which is truly disturbing. Then a month later, divers in the Kuya Bay found her head, clothing, and knife in plastic bags, all weighed down with metal. They found both her legs soon after, again, tied to pieces of metal. And when they discovered the bags, divers described there was a roar on board. Once investigators looked at her severed head, they determined that there was no way a dive hatch could have delivered the fatal blow, as Peter had been trying to say this entire time. However, even with the discovery of Kim's dismembered body, Peter stuck to his story and never said that he dismembered her. It wasn't until an arm was discovered that he said Kim had been killed by carbon monoxide inside while he was on the observation deck. And he dismembered her in a panic, which obviously that makes zero
sense
whatsoever. He's just desperate at this point and trying to, you know, say whatever he can. But he explained that he changed the story surrounding her death so much out of respect for her parents, which is just sick, saying that he thought they would prefer a quick death for their daughter. Which, what kind of diabolical monster even says something like that? Then on January 16th, authorities in Copenhagen announced that Peter is now being indicted for homicide, as it, quote, took place with prior planning and preparation. They also charged him with rape as well as dismemberment, listing the numerous tools he brought on board to assist him. And his trial was slated for March 8th, 2018. Here's a clip announcing his trial alongside some footage from when Peter was initially rescued and that infamous thumbs up.
Danish prosecutors will seek to have inventor Peter Madsen jailed for life after he was charged with murdering Swedish journalist Kim Wall during a trip on his private submarine. In a case described as very unusual and extremely gross, they added that he killed the 30-year-old by cutting her throat or strangulation. Wall, who was researching a story on the entrepreneur and aerospace engineer, went missing after he took her out to sea in his 17-meter submarine last August. Madsen claims she died accidentally. However, he admits throwing her body parts into the sea. The start of the trial has been set for March the 8th.
As the trial commenced, Peter maintained his innocence, even though there's this mountain of evidence against him. He took the position that the only thing he had intentionally done was dismember Kim's body after she had already passed, which would come with a sentence of less than a year in prison, which... Different criminal courts out there.
Yeah,
different
definitely.
Charges out there. But he even claimed that the hundreds of snuff films on his computer were placed there by his interns.
Which is so fucked up.
these people who are doing all, basically every accolade you have ever taken credit for is from these interns who are working right. for free for you, and you're going to throw them under the bus and try to be like, oh, they put them there. Okay. Just, I mean, this guy is an utter piece of shit and only cares about himself and saving himself at this point. Jury members described that Peter engaged with them by staring at them, which maybe this was his attempt at trying to intimidate them. Emma, the documentarian, also testified and provided footage to the court showing that that orange-handled saw, along with other tools, had magically disappeared from the workshop, which, of course, Peter took them. One of the few volunteers who was unsure whether she would participate in the trial was Sarah. Aside from the intense anxiety she felt at the prospect of just seeing Peter, she also knew the contents of his hard drive would be displayed on trial alongside sketches of Kim's remains. Finally, as Peter's self-testimony went after the volunteers and interns, Sarah testified, anonymously providing her final text with Peter that not only showed that he wanted a woman on board the sub, but that he had texted her previously with a description of a murder eerily similar to how Kim had died, bound in the Nautilus. Peter's testimony focused mostly on the carbon monoxide poisoning and why he dismembered Kim, saying that when you have a big problem, you cut it up into small pieces. What on earth?
Yeah, dude.
He also mentioned the names of his three cats.
Which is just, I mean, it just kind of goes to show how not seriously he's treating all of this. Maybe that's an attempt of him to humanize himself, but I honestly think it's him trying to just make fun of this entire process. Like, oh, let me just talk about my cats for a while.
Yeah, he definitely presents himself as like, I'm above this. I'm smarter than all of you,
right.
And I will get myself out of this.
Right.
Alongside the snuff films on Peter's computer, a blog he maintained in the years previous titled Heaven and Hell was shown. And this blog was his retelling of Dante's Divine Comedy. However, in Peter's retelling, he grows bored with heaven and decides to go to hell on his own accord. Which, okay, man. Because there are also numerous other women who brought forward additional messages to the jury exploring sexual violence, kidnapping, and murder. Additionally, there are more women he had attempted to lure onto the sub, aside from just Kim and Sarah. So this was clearly a sick fantasy of his for quite a while.
Right. And extremely premeditated.
And it makes you wonder, is like, did he build this sub for that very reason?
Maybe. Like, honestly.
Like, what else was it used for? It seems there was no other applicable use for it.
Right.
Other than he knew this would be the perfect place to, for this sick fantasy of mine to play out.
Right.
You know, it's kind of, in his mind, the perfect place to commit this type of crime. Under the water, away from everybody. Because, you know, anybody who's been in a submarine will tell you that, you know, as soon as you go under the water, I mean, you're in a different world. It's
right.
silent and, you know, there's nobody there to see what you're doing. And I think Peter used that to his advantage for sure. But finally, on April 25th, 2018, after 10 volunteers and interns had testified against Peter, he was sentenced to life in prison, which in Denmark is an incredibly rare sentence. Although it doesn't work quite the same way that it does here in the US, because those convicted of life in prison can seek a pardon after 12 years of serving that life sentence. So the average time served for a life sentence in Denmark is around 16 years, which that's wild.
I know.
Here in the US, you know, you're sentenced to life with or without parole. And even then, you know, most people who are given life end up actually serving life.
Right. They're going to die in jail.
Right. But that's not the case in Denmark. Outside of the courtroom, Emma was with Christopher Meyer, the ex-flight director, and he told her that he needed a hug. And Emma's footage, as we've been talking about kind of throughout this whole episode, was released in the documentary Into the Deep. Definitely watch it if you want to see, you know, more of that kind of behind the scenes exclusive footage, because it definitely kind of helps give you more of that context, especially around Peter and like
right.
really helping you understand this monster. But in 2018, Peter was engaged in a relationship with a female prison guard when he was assaulted by an 18-year-old inmate at the Storstrom prison. And in 2019, while in prison, Peter married Russian opposition activist Jenny Kirpin, who described Peter as soft-hearted and said that he had even contemplated suicide after this quote-unquote terrible mistake. But the two divorced in 2022 for unknown reasons. And then on October 20th, 2020, Peter threatened a guard using a pistol-like object to escape from prison, and he was followed by prison staff until police began tracking him. He jumped into an unlocked white van, and police detained him. And they noticed what appeared to be bombs strapped to a belt. So obviously they, you know, weren't sure whether or not this was legitimate or not, and they kind of back away from Peter and, you know, call in the reinforcements. And Peter sat beside a hedge as a bomb disposal robot approached him. And after the robot discovered that this bomb was a fake, they took Peter back into custody. And he had been free for only an hour and a half. But the fact that he was able to even get out is pretty wild.
Yeah.
He was then given an additional sentence of 21 months, though it was not to be served concurrently and will likely play a role if he seeks probation, which, yeah, I hope for everyone's sake, especially Kim's family's sake, that they don't let this guy out.
Yeah, I hope the Danish courts kind of understand fucking this guy should be in jail for life. Like, if you, you know, this 12 years thing might apply to a lot of the cases you guys handle. It is an incredibly safe country. But this is not one of those.
No, this guy's a danger to everyone there. I mean, he's clearly has no remorse.
Right.
And he's actively trying to get himself out of prison.
Yeah.
He doesn't even want to face accountability for what he did. But here's a clip of that whole debacle that unfolded of Peter escaping from prison and then being recaptured.
Jamen, jeg kommer gående med min kæreste, og vi er på vej i vores lokale center. Og da vi kommer halvvejs op ad vejen, så kommer den hvide varevogn kørende imod os. Og der går 10 sekunder, så er den omringet. Og de bliver hævet ud af bilen, og med alle pistolerne trukket, og så bliver vi så billedet om at trække væk. Og så går vi selvfølgelig væk, ikke?
Og så det er folk, der bliver hivet ud af den hvide varevogn, der holder dernede?
Ja, de bliver, dem bliver stoppet, og så går der 10 sekunder, så er de ude af bilen og lagt ned på jorden med og pistolerne trukket, og vi bliver bedt om at trække væk. Og det gør vi selvfølgelig med det samme. Ikke?
Peter also officially admitted to the murder in a recent documentary, though it doesn't appear that this documentary is available in the United States. This was a documentary that was filmed overseas, right?
Yes,
done in Denmark, but there are still additional unsolved murders in the area that may have been linked to Peter. Because I think that's everybody's question sort of in the aftermath of this was, did he use this sub more than once?
Right.
Because the thing about it is he had this planned and, you know, criminologists and law enforcement officials are like, this is a extremely violent, brutal crime for a first time offender to do.
Right.
And doesn't mean to say that he's not capable of doing this the first time around. He's been watching this kind of content for years. So
exactly.
He's been given the step-by-step guide, so to speak, on how to go about doing this. But is it possible that he's done this before? And maybe that speaks to sort of this level of confidence that he exudes after the fact that he's like, oh, you know, I've gotten away with this before, so I'm going to do it again.
Right.
I don't know. There is no direct evidence to any of these unsolved murders as of right now, but you never know. Who knows what will come out in the future or what will be found. But to this day, Kim's parents operate the Kim Wall Memorial Fund, which awards young female journalists who want to work in Kim's spirit. And you can access info about this fund, as well as Kim's fantastic writing, at rememberingkimwall.com. But here's a final clip for the Memorial Fund featuring Kim's mother. Let's take a look at that.
Before Kim disappeared, the family gathered to take the yearly family picture. We've done so for 30 years, always in the same spot here in our garden. All these pictures are on the wall outside Kim's childhood room. There are space for many, many more, but there won't be any more pictures. Kim won't come back to us. We will let her soul and spirit live on, and we will do that through Kim Wall Memorial Fund. That will help other young journalists to keep up the good work in Kim's spirit. That we owe her.
It is really hard to just grapple with the devastation that this man caused
no.
Kim's family. I mean, this is the worst possible scenario, worst nightmare, and poor Ole, and just like his last memory of his girlfriend is waving at her as she's on board this submarine, having no idea that this was how it was going to end. Right. And just, you know, in the documentary, you kind of see sort of the toll that this has taken on everybody in Peter's life, and all those interns and Sarah and all these people who devoted all this time and energy to this guy to be completely betrayed
right.
by him in the end. And the realization that this entire time they were working with a sick monster who, was he really interested in trying to achieve these scientific marvels, and or was this all about his sick sexual fantasies at the end
right.
of the day?
Right.
I think that's what we're all wondering. I don't know.
I don't know either. I mean, I think the both could have been a means to an end, you know, yeah. like his projects, which may have been inspired from passion, still allowed for him to have the freedom and the personal, you know, fucking delusion that he could pull this off. And I think, you know, his biographer has a quote where he said, like, when Peter decided to be, you know, this bad guy, to be a monster, it's not like, you know, it's not like he had any remorse after that. It's like he wanted to be the biggest monster in the world.
Why go this route? Why go this path? Was this something that was, you know, sort of this dark side of Peter that existed this entire time and he finally gave into, or did he finally just come, you know, some speculated like he was realizing that, you know, these lofty hopes and dreams maybe were never going to happen.
Right.
And, you know, this idea of being known for something good and positive and, you know, this brilliant mind, and look at what he did. He flew himself into space, and, you know, being known for that, once he kind of found out that wasn't going to happen, something switched and he just said, screw it, threw it all away so that he could take part in the most selfish act
possible
one can do.
Right.
And, took this poor woman's life. I mean, it's just for what? I mean, it's just, he's a sick individual, and I think he's got a lot. I mean, I think he's been sick for a long time, and, you know, all of these things culminating from his childhood and, you know, sort of that mindset of just kind of seeing everything through the lens of violence and war, and also the ego
right.
that he continued to feed and forced everybody else to feed, that he got to a point he felt almost invincible, and he had created this mask that he could go into this black hole that descended beneath the water and do whatever he wanted, and he'd be able to completely cover it up. Because I think he did believe that he was going to get away with this.
100%.
Initially, at least.
Yeah.
Just from his reaction, like, oh, I don't know. Yeah. And then, you know, as they start sort of unraveling, he's like, well, yeah, she did die, but it was accidental. And then it changes right. to carbon monoxide. And then by the end of it, it's just like, no, I am this spawn of Satan.
Right.
I am, you know, the monster in hell. And he just kind of owned up to that. And now he just wants to be
that.
I'm this super villain figure, and just threw everything else away. I mean, just the ultimate story of betrayal in so many different ways. But, you know, poor Kim. I mean, she had no idea whatsoever.
Well, and, you know, she had been to so many more dangerous places.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in literal war zones in some cases, reporting on really important stories. And, you know, everyone said, like, Copenhagen was her backyard. Like, this was a second home to her, if not a first home. And so the fact that this is where it took place, I think, is kind of what shocked her family the most about it all.
I mean, here's a guy who's a local celebrity.
Right.
Here's a guy that got a lot of attention on him. And so I think it was kind of like, yeah, even those people that knew him were like, yeah, he had this sick sort of dark side to him, but he would never act on it.
Right.
You know,
it's just a sense of humor.
Right. or he just enjoyed this type of content, but he never actually played that out in real life. And yeah, ultimately that was where he ended up. Right. I mean, unreal. But definitely, if you're interested, check out Into the Deep on Netflix. It's very well done. It gives you so much more background and context from Emma's footage of just right. being there alongside Peter as he's working through these projects, and you kind of see the, you know, those glimpses of the darkness and then the absolute descent into hell. There's also another one on Max called Undercurrent, which is also great because it also focuses more on Kim right. and her story and all of her accolades. I mean, she seemed like such a beautiful, bright, smart, amazing journalist who is just doing her job, just trying to capture the story as she always did. And she just ran into a horrible, horrible situation
right.
with pure evil. But yeah, let us know your thoughts on this. Have you seen either of these documentaries? And I hope for the love of God and Kim's family that they never let this monster out of prison.
Absolutely.
And I hope it's not a fun place for him. I mean, if he's trying to break out of it, must not be
having a great time. Yeah,
must not be having a great time, but I hope it's hell for him and that he stays there for the rest of his days, because this guy is an absolute danger. I don't see any way that you could let this guy out of prison and feel like the public is safe.
No.
Because somebody like this, somebody who is so, anybody that can do the things that he did to Kim, that doesn't just like, you can't really rehabilitate that.
No.
You can't bring somebody back after that. And there's even audio of them talking to him in prison, and he just seems to be fully entrenched in this evil that he's done.
It's who he is now, you know.
Yeah.
He wants to
the
be
old
this
version
person.
Of him is gone,
right?
Or it was just a mask this entire time. Ugh, horrible. But that is where we're going to wrap up things today. Let us know your thoughts. What do you have? You heard of this? If there's anybody who is listening that's over in Denmark or in Europe for that matter, curious to know what you heard about this case, or if it was. I know in Denmark, at least, it was all over the news and media, but I'm curious, you know, really how far this story reached when it was unfolding. But we will see you guys next week with another one. Kendall will be back in a matter of weeks. We've all missed her, and I know you all have as well. And we'll see you next time.